I am your host, Jay Poole. It's the end of the year, and for many Americans, it's a time of reflection, celebration, and atonement. If you're like me and either live or work near a shopping center of any kind, you're well aware of what season it is, because it takes you forever to get to or from work, or to get to anywhere else you want to go. Depending on your faith, family tradition, or personal values, you may go out and spend a lot of money on gifts, you may pray, you may party, you may donate, you may volunteer, you may reflect on the year that is about to end, and make resolutions for the one that will dawn. The most common religion in the United States is Christianity, and most, though not all, sects of the faith celebrate Christmas, the observance of the birth of Jesus Christ, on December 25th. Christmas Eve and Christmas are the culmination of the Advent season. Advent is the season observed in most Christian traditions of prayer, worship, and sometimes fasting, in preparation for the observance of Christ's birth. For Roman Catholic, Western Rite Orthodox, and many liturgical Protestant denominations, Advent is the beginning of the liturgical year, and for most traditions, begins on the fourth Sunday before Christmas. Most Eastern Orthodox churches observe the Nativity fast instead of Advent, which is a period of abstinence and fasting that runs for 40 days before Christmas, also called the Nativity of Jesus. Some Eastern Orthodox churches, such as the Greek Orthodox, celebrate Christmas on December 25th, while others, such as the Russian Orthodox, celebrate Christmas on January 7th. However, Christmas is not the only holiday celebrated during this time period. Maulid al-Nabi al-Sharif is an Islamic day of observance of the birth of the Prophet Muhammad, the founder of the Muslim faith. How it is recognized, or if Maulid is celebrated, varies among various Muslim sects. In 2017, Maulid began on sundown November 30th and ended December 1st. Hanukkah is the Jewish 8-day festival of lights, which commemorates the recapture of the Jewish temple in Jerusalem by the Maccabees during the 2nd century BC, and a miracle manifest by God that allowed the people of Israel to light the temple menorah for 8 days while new, ritually pure oil could be produced for use in the temple. Hanukkah in 2017 was held from sundown December 12th through December 20th. Kwanzaa starts the day after Christmas, December 26th, and is celebrated until January 1st. It is a cultural holiday that was created in 1966 by Africana Studies professor and Black Power Movement activist Maulana Karanga. He developed Kwanzaa, which means first fruits in Swahili, as the first Pan-African holiday celebrating the heritage of members of the African diaspora. Each of the 7 days represents one of the 7 principles of African heritage based on what Karanga called communitarian African philosophy. Originally, Kwanzaa was meant to be an Afrocentric alternative to Christmas, but is now accepted as a celebration that many Black Americans take part in addition to Christmas. And finally, the New Year is a civic holiday, generally a time to celebrate, bid the passing year adieu, and usher in the new year. Many people take this time to throw huge parties, have get-togethers with friends and family, while others spend that time in more relaxing settings with a significant other, family, or enjoying their own company. So really, the season from after Thanksgiving to early January is truly a holiday season that goes beyond Christmas and New Year's. So why is acknowledging that variety threatening for some Americans? Why do some believe that there's a war on Christmas just because some businesses and individuals use the greeting, Happy Holidays? Of course, much of this tends to be media-generated outrage. News outlets want people to watch stories so they can sell advertising. So those isolated real incidents of perceived offense by the local store clerk saying Happy Holidays instead of Merry Christmas or by coffee cups being decorated in plain red instead of with Christmas trees, is fodder for huge segments done on the War on Christmas. But like a lot of these issues that appear very simple, the War on Christmas is a stand-in for a completely different issue entirely. You might hear it as assimilation versus multiculturalism, tribalism and ethnic similarity versus diversity. Really, it's anxiety over a changing world more generally, and particularly anxiety over a society in which power is ever threatening to shift, and those who have passively enjoyed a more privileged position in society feeling threatened by the prospect of having to share with the disadvantaged other. But nothing is new under the sun. The United States is a nation of immigrants, but ever since the founding, subsequent waves of immigrant groups have been seen as a threat to American values in their time. Prohibition, a ban on the sale of alcohol, which was ushered in by the 18th Amendment and later repealed by the 21st, came about due to the temperance movement. Now, part of that movement did have noble intentions. For example, many women who were part of that movement wanted to see an end to domestic violence exacerbated by out-of-control drinking. But some of the support for prohibition came about due to anti-immigrant sentiment, including against Irish and German immigrants. In Cincinnati during the 1800s, the German immigrant neighborhood of Over the Rhine was home to a number of breweries and beer halls, and were places of community and cultural expression for the new immigrants. But prohibition ended this, and much of that was by design. As discussed back in episode 3, the movement to preserve Confederate statues has been framed by its proponents as a matter of preserving history. But while the Civil War was fought between 1861 and 1865, the vast majority of the statues were erected in the early to mid-20th century, and not all in the South. These were initially erected not to commemorate the sacrifices of soldiers fighting for the South, but for different purposes. To champion a more palatable narrative for the Civil War that whitewashed the horrors of slavery, and in many cases, to intimidate African Americans who were engaged in pushes for equal rights at the time these were built. While most Confederate statue preservationists today, with the exception of maybe Roy Moore, wouldn't say they support slavery or Jim Crow, the statues themselves and the movement to retain them are visceral reactions to societal changes in how we approach race. Many who are concerned about a war on Christmas don't fast for Advent or even spend a lot of time reflecting on Jesus' birth. For a lot of Americans, it comes down to wanting to maintain exclusivity, not having to share with those they were never compelled to share with in the past. But if you are wondering, Christmas has nothing to fear by sharing a season on the calendar. The separation of church and state, which is a Jeffersonian statement, is optimal for the church as well as the state. Religious worldviews often inform how people view political issues and the culture in which they live, but at the same time, we need to recognize that politics and culture can also influence religion. As I mentioned last week, with the major jump in white evangelicals stating personal moral conduct no longer matters when evaluating politicians, or the majority of white evangelical voters in Alabama did not see racism or child molestation as deal breakers. When political movements co-opt religious ones, it can have detrimental effects on those religions. Islam is experiencing radicalization in its ranks, not because the religion is inherently violent or anti-West, but because the political infiltrated the religious. It has happened in Christianity too. The Crusades, the Holy Roman Empire, the Spanish Inquisition, and within the past century, the myriad of terrorist attacks due to the Troubles. If we run this country and curtail people's rights and liberties based on one group's interpretation of religion, that is a corruption of religion and the end of democracy as we know it. Look, No one is forcing you to celebrate holidays of religions you don't believe in. But these holidays and their adherents exist here in America. Being of a majority religion or race or culture does not mean your individual rights matter any more than others. Don't say majority rules, then expect to be judged as an individual. You can't have it both ways. Potstirrer Podcast will be back after this. Did you know for today's episode? For many people, the New Year's holiday is a time for reflecting on the past year and looking forward to the year ahead. Traditions such as New Year's Rockin' Eve on TV, the wild party at the bar or at a friend's house, and even a night of fireworks are ways that many Americans celebrate the holidays. As a kid, I would watch the New Year's Eve specials in the living room with my parents and siblings. Then, once the ball dropped at Times Square, we all hit the floor at the sound of gunshots going off into the air from reckless neighbors, because yes, we lived in Detroit. But then after that died down, calls would come in from relatives and family friends wishing us a Happy New Year. Those were great times. Many Americans start off the new year by pledging New Year's resolutions. They set goals that they want to achieve in the new year. They might want to lose weight or bulk up. They might want a new promotion or a better dating life or a better relationship with their spouse or kids or a padded bank account. And sometimes, a resolution can lead to real life-altering experiences. I follow someone on my personal Instagram who used a New Year's resolution to lose over 300 pounds in less than 2 years. Many people choose the new year to do new things. Since it's a new year, that should provide enough motivation to stick to a major change, right? But did you know that only 8% of people achieve their New Year's resolutions? According to an article in Forbes, reasons why many people tend not to achieve their New Year's resolutions include making goals too overwhelming or vague, or quitting once adversity hits. Resolutions are easier to stick to when the goals are simple, tangible, and specific, and the attitude is positive, even when setbacks occur. Something I suggest is to not do New Year's resolutions. This is not a defeatist position. If your goal is something worth doing, it's worth working towards sooner rather than later. In 2017, I decided to work on a few personal goals, but it was not on New Year's Day, it was at different points during the year. As a happily married woman with no children, working outside the home in a white-collar career, I thought about what would make my life more fulfilling. One of those decisions was producing Potstirrer Podcast. Over the years, ideas came to my head of different ways I could express my interests and create content, but I would sit on those ideas, not act on them, then let them pass. But I didn't want to wait to live life anymore. When I decided that podcasting was something I was truly interested in, I researched how to do it, and then I took the leap right then and there and began getting everything I needed to accomplish it. I'm sure that many of you have had ideas of how you want to improve your lives, make yourself, your loved ones, or your community better. Sometimes it's just taking an idea and making it happen. And you don't need the new year to do that. Now, back to Potstirrer Podcast. As the final episode of 2017, I would like to take a moment to reflect on this year and talk about what we might expect in U.S. politics in 2018. After a presidential election in 2016 with an outcome that was shocking to so many Americans, Donald Trump took office on January 20th, 2017. During much of this year, there have been sustained attacks on our democracy through delegitimization of mainstream news as fake news, while elevating sources friendly to Trump, such as Fox News and Breitbart. The Republican Congress, by failing to do its job and hold hearings to confirm President Barack Obama's Supreme Court pick Merrick Garland throughout all of last year. It allowed Donald Trump to select Neil Gorsuch for the Supreme Court, a vote Trump should never have had in the first place. The Trump administration and the GOP apparatus alike have fought to keep populations that are less friendly to Republicans from voting through widespread voter disenfranchisement and a voter integrity commission that wanted to inspect all the voter rolls in the country to see how you voted. Many in Congress, especially Republicans, have avoided meeting with their own constituents as they voted unsuccessfully to repeal the Affordable Care Act more than once, and successfully to deliver a tax hike to most Americans so they could provide a tax cut to themselves and their moneyed lobbyists. The Trump administration has fought against immigrants from Syria and other majority Muslim countries and has moved to split up the families of undocumented immigrants through deportation and cruel practices surrounding it. Donald Trump has championed lawlessness by attempting to obstruct the investigation in Russia's involvement in the 2016 election, supporting police brutality, stating Nazis who commit acts of terror are very fine people, pardoning former Maricopa County Sheriff Joe Arpaio, who was responsible for the deaths of unconvicted inmates and whose administration ignored reports of child rape from Latino residents, and endorsing credibly accused child molester Roy Moore for U.S. Senate. In this list of what happened in our country in 2017 at the hand of Donald Trump and the Republican Party is by no means exhaustive. But in 2017, more people have woken up and have gotten engaged. The Women's March, Black Lives Matter, anti-fascist protests and counter-protests, the work of Indivisible and other independent groups to hold political officials to account, volunteers engaged in calling their representatives, letter writing, and voter registration drives to maximize their voice. And it has started to make a difference, as the most recent 2017 off-year elections have demonstrated. Even with obstacles, these can be overcome, and many Americans are working very hard to take our country back and restore democracy. Let's see that continue. So, this is the part of the show where I'm going to give a few predictions. And so this is what I expect to happen. The GOP tax bill was not a popular bill, but the Republicans were adamant about passing it. They will see a price paid for not listening to the American people. My guess is that some voted for this bill fully knowing they would be defeated in the next election cycle, but wanted to get the best deal for themselves they could on the way out. Others figure their seats are safe. Many have spent years telling their conservative or moderate constituents that they were worth their vote because of abortion, or guns, or being tough on crime. But this support is slowly eroding, as some are realizing they're getting jerked around. So at least a few of those seats won't be quite as safe as they think. In 2018, I predict that at least one chamber of Congress will flip, especially with the grassroots energy out here and anger about this administration and Congress. The Republicans will lose at least one chamber of Congress, maybe both. Here's my other prediction, and this is a two-parter. I think that by this time next year, Trump may be seriously looking at impeachment. The tax bill the GOP wanted for their donors is done. They pay in November of 2018. At that point, Trump will be less of an asset and more of an albatross to the Republicans. So, at that stage, he may stick around to be impeached, but he will likely look for a way out to save face and not risk the ultimate humiliation of being removed from office. However, if Donald Trump is still president in November 2020, he will be reelected. If he sticks around that long, it is either because Congress has failed to do its job to provide a check on executive power, or democracy in the United States will have become so eroded that the mechanisms for Trump's removal will be neutered to non-existent. Do not let the presence of an election fool you, because Russia has elections too, but they are by no means a democracy. We don't want to leave it to chance. Let us do our part and continue political engagement and activity to make sure we don't have to encounter this scenario. The next episode of Pot Stirrer Podcast will be out Sunday, February 4th, 2018. The time off is because I will be undergoing two surgeries between the end of December and mid-January. Each episode of Pot Stirrer Podcast involves hours of research and preparation in order to produce, and I will need the time to recover in order to provide to you, my loyal listeners, with the best content possible. The best way for me to do that is if I take care of myself and take the time to heal up. Now that said, I will not be completely gone during this time. I'll still be engaged. I'll continue to be active on Twitter at PotStirrerCast, Facebook at PotStirrerPodcast, Instagram at PotStirrerPodcast, and on the website at PotStirrerPodcast.com as much as possible, posting stories that you want to know about or that you need to know about, and engaging with you through the power of social media. Feel free to share your ideas for new episodes, thoughts about the news stories of the day, and ways you are getting engaged in your communities and in our country's politics. Thank you very much for your support throughout our inaugural year of Pot Stirrer Podcast. I look forward to delivering more content and engaging with you in the months and years to come. Have a Merry Christmas, a great holiday season, and a wonderful new year. I'll see you in February. Watch this space.